Like to read the scripture passage for today. It's from 1 Peter 2, 2 through 10. Instead, like a newborn baby, desire the pure milk of the word. Nourished by it, you will grow into salvation, since you have tasted that the Lord is good. Now you are coming to him as to a living stone. Even though this stone was rejected by humans, from God's perspective, it is chosen, valuable. You yourselves are being built like living stones into a spiritual temple. You are being made into a holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices that are acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Thus it is written in Scripture, "Look, I am laying a cornerstone in Zion, chosen, valuable. The person who believes in him will never be shamed." So God honors you who believe. For those who refuse to believe, though, the stone the builders tossed aside has become the capstone. This is a stone that makes people stumble and a rock that makes them fall. Because they refuse to believe in the word, they stumble. Indeed, this is the end to which they were appointed. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people who are God's own possession. You have become this people so that you may speak of the wonderful acts of the one who called you out of darkness into his amazing light. Once you weren't a people, but now you are God's people. Once you hadn't received mercy, but now you have received mercy. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'd like to invite Lori McCormick to come forward.
Good morning. I'm going to share a little with you today about the women in my life that have impacted my faith. Yesterday, actually, I attended a funeral for a grandmother figure in my life. It got me thinking about all these amazing women in my life and the impact that they've had on my faith and the person that I am today. Before I begin, though, I need to kind of explain a little bit about my family dynamic, because it's very different than most. At one point in life, I had six people that I called mom and dad. They were my parents, not because they were my best friend's cool mom that I liked calling mom, but because they were my actual parents. They raised me. I lived with them. If you're curious about how that worked, I'd like to share it with you another time. When I was a kid, people used to refer to families like mine as dysfunctional. I used to tell people all the time that we function just fine, we just function differently, and that was the truth. I have 12 grandparents, actual grandparents. So, to say the least, I have a larger amount of women in my life that have a close family bond with than most, because none of that includes any of my aunts. Most of them are no longer with me, so pardon me if I get a little choked up today. As it is for most women, the most influential woman in my life was my mother. My mom was not much of a churchgoer, but she was a believer, and she certainly practiced Christian values. My mom taught me integrity. She was the most honest person on the planet. If you wanted a straight answer, you just asked my mom. You were going to get it no matter what. There was no sugarcoating it either. That was deceptive. Now you know where I get it from. And honest day's work meant just that. You give it your all. You didn't use time on the clock to chit-chat or to surf the internet. You worked. She was big on the idea that if you said you were going to do something, you did it no matter what. My mom taught me, without ever thinking about it, that the world is black and white. We sin or we don't sin. The only gray in this world is the grace that God gives us and the grace that we give each other. While my mother had a heightened sense of right and wrong and a strong moral compass, she also had an amazing ability to live without judgment. My mother knew that her values were hers and that each individual had their own compass. She taught us to accept people for who they are and to show them love and grace in all situations. Next is my first stepmom, Robin. My two sisters and I moved in with her and my dad shortly after my mom relocated us back to California. We'd been living in Kentucky with my grandparents, but my mom wanted us to have a relationship with our dad, so she moved us back. Once here in California, my mom realized that she could not afford to raise three children by herself. My dad lived in a big house in Huntington Beach, and there was plenty of room for all of us. So naturally, off we went to live with a man and a woman we barely knew. I was 5, and for the next 6 years, this would be my home. These were pretty influential years, so Robin has had a big impact on my life. Her and my dad divorced when I was 12. I still call her mom. I am thankful to Robin for opening a lot of doors for me and my sisters. Thanks to her, we had full lives and got to experience all kinds of things. Growing up, we played sports, we took dance and music lessons, we went to plays and museums, all things that my mother was not interested in and would never have done. Robin introduced us to culture, but most importantly, she took us to church. My mom sent us to church on a bus when we were little and lived in Kentucky, but she never went with us. To this day, I have no idea why, but I can count on one hand the number of times that my mother was actually in a church. Before Robin, church was something you did on Sundays for fun. It was about the bus ride there, singing songs and laughing with the other kids and playing on the church playground. It wasn't about learning about the Bible. But for Robin, it was important. We went just about every week. I have her to thank for my faith. Those early church years cultured a faith that has grown over time. The influence she had on me about the importance of church stuck with me even after I left her home. When I moved back in with my mom and stepdad, my dad and Robin were divorcing, but I went to church every day. Every Sunday I would get up and walk to the local church by myself. I would continue to go to church every week that I was not at my dad's until my junior year of high school. Then there's my grandma Elsie, my dad's mom. She was one of the most fun-loving women you will ever meet. She was my favorite, and later she would become my kids' favorite. We didn't see her much as kids. My dad and her did not have the best of relationships. But my mom took us to visit her every year in Florida before we moved back to California. And then, in eighth grade, I got to go visit my dad's family in Florida by myself. I stayed with Grandma Elsie for 3 full weeks. We were bonded from that moment forward. Once I hit adulthood, she came to visit every year until the year she died. My kids look forward to her visits as much as I did. She had a contagious spirit, one that I would learn was a result of inner peace. The peace came from a hard life filled with poor decisions. Decisions that she would later learn did not define her. That peace came from a knowledge that no matter what, God had her in the palm of his hand. Whatever mistakes she had made in life, they were erased because she was saved. At the end of her life, she lived with no fear because she knew it was all in God's hands. Then there's my grandma Eve. She was a special lady. Her full name was Evangeline, and I can only hope that Evie turns out to be half the person Grandma Eve was. She's well on her way because tenacity definitely defined my grandmother. She had a will like no other. Combine that with a genuine, unconditional, everlasting love, and you have a force to be reckoned with. My grandmother had a challenging life. She lost her dad early in life. She was raised by a single mom for some time. Her mother would eventually remarry and have 2 more children, making my grandmother the oldest of 5. Her mom and stepdad would die in a car accident when her 2 youngest siblings were still small children. My grandmother and grandfather took them in and raised them along with my mom and what would later be 4 more children of their own. Never occurred to my grandmother to do anything but take those kids in, even though she was still a kid herself and my grandmother and grandfather were barely making ends meet. My grandfather was in the Army, so they moved around a lot. When he finished his 20 years and was due to get out, they were living in California. My grandfather wanted to move back to Kentucky. My grandmother refused to go. Stubbornness, or will, depending on how you want to spend it, won out that day. He left, she stayed, and finished raising their children. My grandfather eventually remarried. My grandmother never even went on a date with another man. She had married this man before God, and there was no other. She believed that he would return to her, and she was right. He did return some 30 years later, but they were remarried and lived happily ever after for the last few years of their life. Family was first for my grandmother, always. She supported and loved her children through a lot of situations that many parents would have turned their backs on. My grandmother loved everyone she knew with an unconditional love. She believed that all people had good in them and that some just needed help bringing it out. And then there's my grandma Virgie. She's my stepdad Bob's mom. She came to visit us every year to escape Michigan winters. She would stay for a couple of weeks, long enough for things to thaw out at home. She didn't like going to church alone, so after my grandfather passed, when she came to California, she took me. She's probably the reason I continued to go to church for so long when no one else in my house did. Every time she came to town, I went to church. So even as I got older and began to find distractions, her visits always grounded me. Grandma Shirley is the woman that we buried yesterday. Now brace yourself for this one. She is the mother of my first stepmom's current husband, David. I've known her most of my life because Robin and my dad were really good friends with David and his wife, first wife, Laura, when I was growing up. As a matter of fact, David was my dad's best man in their wedding. Now Robin's married to him. It's not nearly as scandalous as that sounds, but it is what happened. We spent many a weekend playing in Shirley's backyard. She had a shared fence with David and his wife. I told you my family dynamic was a little different than most. Shirley was a joyful woman. Her joy came from knowing and loving God, and she made that clear to everyone. She was an amazing woman in her own right, but most would never knew it. She was incredibly humble. She loved to talk with her family. She would always tell others how amazing her husband, her children, and her grandchildren were, but she never spoke of her own numerous accomplishments. I was quite surprised to hear some of her life stories from her children yesterday. And finally, there's Alyssa. While she's not a woman yet, she is certainly a fine young lady, if I say so myself. I shared with you early on that I quit going to church in my junior year of high school. This was because of a conversation with a young pastor and a subsequent lack of support from the rest of my pastoral staff that turned me off from church. I was going to a church that I learned on that day was full of judgment and condemnation. I didn't go back for a long time. It actually wasn't until Alyssa was about 5. At that time, I began having conversations with Jeff about why I didn't go to church. He was trying to convince me that an independent relationship with God was not as strong as the one that was supported by communion with others. It got me thinking, and then I realized that Alyssa didn't have much of a relationship with God. When I began asking her questions about Bible stories, I realized that she didn't know much. I hadn't been doing my job as a parent because I lacked the support of a faith community. So I went back to church so that my daughter could have a relationship with God. I went back for her, but it turns out Jeff was right. Don't tell him I said that. And it was the best decision for me as well. These amazing women that I have been blessed to know and to love live their lives that truly demonstrated Christian values. They have taught me through their actions to love unconditionally and without judgment, to live a life of integrity and to be humble, to reflect the joy of God's grace to others, to trust in God and his plan for my life, and to be patient and wait on God, and to make church a regular part of life. Thank you.
Good morning. It's not fair. Claire told me I was coming for my Mother of the Year award. Let's see it. Hi, my name is Brenda. I'm a mom. Since Claire asked me to say a few words today, I've been suffering from writer's block. I jotted a few things down, thoughts here and there during the week, but I was wondering when I was going to get some divine inspiration for the rest of it. So you can imagine how pleased I was this morning at 3:45 when I began to write things down in my head. Anyway, I was about 30 years old when I started to feel like something was missing from my life. After several years, I found that A friend of mine and a colleague, also, he was 15 years my senior, he had similar thoughts and was sad that he had no heir to pass things on to. To some of you, it may seem shocking that I would take action so outside of the bounds of cultural norms. To others that know me well, not so much. When I told my sister that I was pregnant, she left the room, and she didn't come back out. She didn't speak to me for about 8 months. It was just before Lucas was born that she decided that she was sorry and that she wanted to have a relationship with me and my son. Years later, I learned that she'd been terribly upset because she had medical conditions that made it extremely difficult and somewhat dangerous for her to have children. And she thought that I had just taken it for granted, that it was easy to just want to have a child and then to go get pregnant. She had no idea how long and planned out the process was for me, that it took me a year and a half to even get pregnant, or that I suffered a miscarriage along the way. We since talk. We're good now. My dad wouldn't speak to me for years. We also speak now. My mom, however, was overjoyed. She was there for me. She was my champion and my cheerleader. She actually always was, but during this pregnancy and after Lucas was born, she was always there. Lucas was born on a Sunday morning a little more than 20 years ago. He was not an accident. He was planned and loved even before he was conceived, and we were in church the next Sunday. Brad Copeland baptized Lucas when he was about 9 months old. It was Christ the King Sunday, and I remember standing here and him firmly warning me that baptism was not to be entered into carelessly or lightly, but with intention, dedication, and reverence. So I wanted to say a few words about Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. To train, I take to mean to shepherd, to guide, to direct, to teach. It's an action word. We have an opportunity and a charge to direct or train our child's path or the way toward God. Children are seen as without wisdom or lacking in sense, but only because they haven't learned yet, because we haven't taught them. It may be a teacher's job to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic, but it's our job as parents to teach or train them with a moral and a biblical foundation. Train up a child in the way he should go. Do it intentionally, not passively. So much of what they learn is taught unintentionally, which is why Lucas is such a sarcastic smart aleck. He had a great role model. If we intentionally orient them toward God and teach his commandments, then they learn to have boundaries. If we teach that God is the highest authority, then they'll learn that they are not the highest authority. They don't make the rules. They have to be taught these things because they don't just know them intuitively. I've tried to be a good example for Lucas by raising him in church, modeling service and care to others and commitment by taking active roles in church, serving on session, social planning committee, and praying not just at church but also at home, and then also by playing music. I do have a little story. One Sunday morning, I woke Lucas up for church, and he wanted to sleep in. He was complaining and said, "Do you have to play today?" And suddenly it just struck me that being slightly unconventional to him was normal. And I said, take that thought and say it outside of this house. My mom has to play drums at church. How many kids get to say that and complain about that? It just struck me as odd. And then I said, "Now get dressed, we're going to church." So unfortunately, the list of things that he's learned from me is much longer and not as flattering. I won't subject you to this list, but suffice to say that sometimes I've had to tell him, don't do it the way I've done it, do it the right way. I can't imagine having done anything else with my life. I'm glad that I'm Lucas's mom. I trust that Lucas will grow to make good, positive, wise decisions. The proverb says that time will prove it true. So thanks be to God that my mom trained me up with a good foundation so that I can try to do the same for Lucas. I fail and Lucas fails, but we love and respect each other. And besides, God has our back. He can curb our faults, correct our minds, soften our hearts, and turn us back to him and his path. God bless my mom, and God bless my son.
My little talk, my faith story. And the title is Greatest Hits and Heroes. And I'm going to share five songs. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing, that were signposts along my spiritual journey and the heroes of my faith. You might not know all of the songs. You'll have to look them up on YouTube. And you won't know my heroes, but that's okay. Your mind can wander a little bit as you fill in your own greatest hits and heroes. This is my father's world, and it was when I was a child, the music of the spheres, my heavenly father, but also my mom and dad. They gave me everything. My grandma and relatives and teachers, Reverend Fryman and Catherine Miller and Paul Snyder at Donald's Creek Church of the Brethren. If you don't know the Church of the Brethren, think Mennonite light. And if you don't know Mennonites, think of Amish light. So if not in chronological order, that's a little bit of my background. They were marked by the ideals of peace, simplicity, and service. We had the love feast, communion done up full scale. After worship service and a simple meal, the deacon at each table would put on a soft apron, kneel down with a basin of water to wash the feet of the next person. After drying their feet, both would rise and embrace one another, and so around the table. With the gentle splash of the water and the rustle of kneeling and rising, we were reminded of Christ's great love, a feast of love prepared for us. And Jesus said, I have set an example that you should wash one another's feet. By the way, the meal in our church was a bread and beef soup known as dunker soup. The Church of the Brethren practiced baptism by immersion, and at least in the beginning were derisively called dunkers because they dunked people. So theologians can debate sprinkling versus immersion, but I have to say that I'm happy that my faith journey included baptism as a believer. And that was done by Reverend Fryman in the baptistry at Donald's Creek Church in 1965. So as my foundation was laid, a new song came around. It was a song not in the hymnal. And that song was Pass It On, and it was new at that time. And it told me in a signpost along my way that I was the one responsible for seeking ways to nurture and share my faith. Then, as an adult, two congregations that had stupendously important effects on me and my faith journey, First Christian Church of Orange and of Riverside, the song Spirit, Spirit of Restlessness, Calling, and Free. It was time to respond to the call. You don't know my heroes, Joe and Linda, or my first three female pastors, Audrey, Pam, and Suzanne. You don't know the six people that became my spiritual brothers and sisters for the past 30 years. And then there was Reverend Ben Boren, the man of greatest faith I ever knew. And not because he's here, but Chris Nettles with the greatest heart of a servant I ever knew. And of course, my greatest hero of faith is Tim Lewis. And I'm not going to say anything more because I won't make it through. But no matter what your foundation is, you won't grow spiritually unless you have a person who will help you focus, who will question you, and who will listen. And if you really want to know what impact your faith has, as Brenda said, you should have, in my case, two bright and inquisitive boys. Our sons are the ones who introduced me to Pressing On by the Christian band Reliant K. Look it up on YouTube. The Apostle Paul says, I press on toward the goal to win the prize. Reliant K says, pressing on, pressing on. All my distress is going, going, gone. And Diana says, when you need to press on, you should do so with guitars and drums. So now I'm in this place and at this time, and the song that is taking me forward is called Give Yourself to Love, another YouTube song you'll have to look up. Kate Wolf says, you must give yourself to love if love is what you're after. Love can't give you everything, but it gives you what you need. Paul says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And so I press on in many ways. Some of you know that I'm training for a charity walk, and I can tell you all about an opportunity to do this at some other time. But a silly greatest hit and hero I have, or I had when I was a kid, was Mary Tyler Moore. Oh, her hair, her clothes, her apartment, I loved it all. And do you remember the theme song? Try to remember the end of it while I finish up. I had a t-shirt made for my walk. I don't think of myself as a leader, but if there's anything I hope to be able to be, is an encourager. And we wanted the back of the shirt to give hope to anyone on any path. Paul says, and hope does not put us to shame. And Diana's t-shirt says, you're gonna make it after all. So I hope you find your greatest hits and heroes, and I'm blessed to have found mine.